He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys. Robin's in a car, which I guess is a good thing.
I think it'll start off the show this week by talking about driving in colors, because we talked about it last week and it wasn't hot. I thought it'd be better this week, and I must say, I have been for an hour and a half in Connecticut into New York State and just got off I-90 West onto the Northway heading up towards the Adirondacks. And the color between, I went up Route 20 in New York State, right on paralleling Connecticut last week, as being a good, normal corridor road, along with others. But I would say that it has passed. Whenever, if there was a prime, I didn't see it. Wasn't really prime last weekend, and it is worse this weekend, at least on the drive this morning of the show being done. And then I got north of Hillsdale, because I followed 22 all the way up to I-90. It got better between Hillsdale and I-90, at least along the road corridor, which had me start thinking, and I posed this question to my other guy on the phone, on the show here, Jay, and he didn't want to touch it, but I was wondering whether or not it had the air climate of being along a road corridor where there's constant, is it carbon monoxide that's emitted from cars and trucks or not, but the color quite vivid along Route 22 area between Hillsdale, New York, and I-90. And now I'm on the Northway, and I'm near an exit, and I'm parked, and it's very vivid at the exit and very muted away the roadway, away being, let's say, whatever you can see over treetops when you get the chance to do that. I'm going to guess anywhere from 200 to 400 feet away from the roadway. The colors off in the distance seem to be non-existent. Lots of grays, greens, trees missing leaves. We've had a lot of wind, and I think maybe the leaves have been blown away so that they're not going to get the chance to turn color and hang around. So that's it for the road trip, looking for fall colors, at least in the zone I have been in on this broadcast morning. The other thing I've noted as I've been driving along is the extreme, and I've talked about this on other shows, Jay, I don't know whether you've commented on it or not, but you can chime in at some point. The number of people who no longer use the right lane for the cruise lane, they use the middle lane when there are three lanes, and it just is almost like they should start posting signs saying cruise lane should be middle lane, because cars go by the middle lane cars right and left as if those were the fast lanes to go. And I'm wondering, Jay, do you have any feel more secure in the middle lane as opposed to staying on the right lane where they might feel hemmed in if they were going a little bit less fast than the general standard speed that goes on in these interstate type roads?
Oh yeah, I have an opinion.
Go right ahead.
Well, I think you know where I'm coming from on this one. That must have been a trick question. 12 states have enacted laws, and maybe more now. And that law is keep right except to pass. That would mean you drive in the right lane, and in my world,
the rightmost lane.
Correct.
If it's a four lane, you'll be in the right lane of four lanes. If it's a three lane, you'll be in the right lane of three lanes.
That's correct.
And that's not happening.
It's simple.
It's simple, but it's not happening.
Yeah, but you'll forgive me, it doesn't, as a pass, it doesn't seem to happen. It doesn't seem that anyone is understands why it is supposed to happen. And I don't know if you have encountered the Weavers, not the folk singers this morning, but or just people cruising in the middle lane. But
no, people are cruising in the middle lane. They're going, speed limit on the roads I've been on, as Jay knows, are 60. It's posted at 65 miles an hour. The true speed is generally between, I would say, 8 and 10 miles an hour above that. before enforcement might begin. And therefore, you've got cars going along between 65 and 75 miles an hour. And I would say the predominant speed in the middle lane is close to the posted speed limit, at least on I-90 west, which I was going towards Buffalo, and now on I-87 north, the Northway. There are more cars in the middle lane going slower than the posted speed than there are in either of the other two lanes, and there are three-lane roads here. So there may be laws in the state saying that the right lane is supposed to be the cruising lane.
No, there's no such thing. Well, hold on. There's no such thing as a cruising lane. And well, that's it's the terminology
that's
been...
People listening know what I'm talking about. You may not. But
no, I know what you're talking
about. You're going at... I know all lanes are cruising lanes. It's the speed limit zone doesn't seem to be in the right lane, which is where you'd be going at maybe the speed limit as opposed to exceeding the speed limit. And we don't need to belabor it too much, except that people aren't using the right lane as the slow lane if there is a slow lane on all these roads.
We don't need to belabor it at all, except that it's a little confusing. What are you saying? People are driving in the wrong lane? And if so, what's the right lane? Correct.
There are some laws in which says you're not supposed to pass in the right lane.
Okay, you asked me to chime in, so I'm chiming in again.
Okay.
When you read the driver ed books and what you're taught in driver ed, and what I've heard since I was a kid is slow lane, cruising lane, passing lane, and that's where the problem begins. If you let that notion, if you put it aside and just say keep right except to pass, it doesn't matter what speed you're going. You just keep to the rightmost lane that you can, you resolve a lot of the passing on the right problems and the weaving problems. And it's just a question of discipline, but it actually works. And there is no such thing as a slow lane, a cruising lane, or fast lane, because all those terms are, except for the cruising lane, slow and fast are relative terms.
Correct.
I agree
with you.
Keep it simple. Keep right except to pass.
Except that the drivers don't know it or don't follow it. And that's really the point of this whole comment.
Right.
And I'm sure lots of people who pay attention to how they're driving note what you and I are noting. And it's not going to change. It's very clear that all these little idiosyncrasies that we bring up about driving and all
Robin,
that.
Robin, you have to have faith. Things can change.
Well, the other issue is if, for example, you're leaving the city and you've got exits that...
And there's, in my mind, there's some flexibility. There's a rule, quote-unquote, my rule, keep right except to pass, I think is a great rule. Now, when you're going around cities where you have exits every half a mile, it is a little bit different because you have people merging on and getting off the highway. Now, that brings me to another problem is that people don't know how to merge on a highway. And the safest way to merge on a highway is not to stop when you merge, but it is to accelerate to the speed of traffic that is on the highway. So when you're merging on the highway that's going 55 miles an hour, you should be going 55 miles an hour by the time you get on that highway. And for a long time, we've had on-ramps that were too short to do that. And I think of the old parkways, like along the Hutch or...
Taconic.
Or the Taconic.
Yeah.
But I've noticed recently that even when ramps have been redesigned and you have long, sometimes a half a mile long on-ramp...
Merging ramp,
you see people just stopped.
To make the left into the traffic.
Before getting... not using that ramp and just stopping and then just looking at traffic go by.
We dove to the issue of retraining, which you brought up in the last week's show, about should there be retraining for drivers once you've had your license for over, let's say, 10 years.
Well,
because it's clear to me that people are not up to date about the sophistication of these topics that we're talking about in terms of how to use them properly. Because you're absolutely right. When you merge, you should be merging at or slightly higher than the speed that the speed limit is posted or the traffic in the lane to the left that you're going to merge into is, because you've got to blend in with that traffic. And to slow down and try to look over your shoulder is counterproductive to the whole issue of merging smoothly into traffic.
Well, it could also be that people are so used to the traffic flow being such that they can't get their car in, which brings me to another, you know, this is sort of the obverse of that, which is when there is construction or when you're going down to a lane, you know, three lanes are going down to two for whatever reason, where there's just the most hideous lack of civility in terms of, and I remember somebody, this is...
In terms of 50, what, Jill? You didn't finish the sentence.
Merging. 50 years ago. 50 yeah. years ago, someone was screaming on the LIE. It's just one, you go, I go. You go, I go. You go, I... 50 years, fact half
of,
a century.
Half fact of life, Jill. Human nature.
Right.
It is not going to change. It is beyond most people to accommodate that... alternate
okay, so if it's beyond merging. Most people, what makes anybody think that it, people aren't going to stay to the right?
Okay, I give up. I guess you guys are right about human nature.
All right, well, you were the one who called it. All right, anyway, Robin, what else?
Let's move on to other things. Jay, you had some things you wanted to bring up, so we can talk about the production of Tesla if you want.
We all saw those article that same article that was... published in different online
different magazines. Outlets.
Yeah, different outlets.
No, because actually some of it was a regular newspaper, but it was presented as news. Was it?
I guess the headline of I think what we're referring to was Tesla fires hundreds of employees, and I can't remember if it was 300, 400, 500. Yep, several hundred employees for sure.
Well, a lot of them were executive level jobs. They weren't production. Work.
They were all level jobs, from what I read, and you know, Tesla's press release or comment was that, hey, we do yearly reviews, and yes, we let people go.
There was some implication. It originated in the San Jose Mercury News, also known as the Merc News. And there was some implication, and it was just looking for actual knowledge here, not innuendo. But there was some implication that this was based, in some cases, on performance review. And that's
true.
Where
there were a whole
it
lot
got
of
confusing.
Things. There were a whole lot of things, but I want to interject here because I don't think the listeners of the show want to listen to us talk about Tesla's production problems unless they are in line to get one of the 375,000 or 400,000 model.
Well, statistically, there must be some.
And that's where the production problem is on that, and hopefully some listeners are wondering whether they're ever going to get their cars because the production ramp-up is way behind schedule. And unless they start producing 20,000 cars a month, divide 20,000 to 400,000 and figure out how many months that it would be if they were all that model that you were waiting for your car, it's going to be some time before a lot of people, if they stay in that lineup of waiting list, ever see those cars. I project 3 years maybe at a minimum before they might catch up to 400,000. But we'll see. And... you know, it's the usual issue of where you've got high technology cars having problems with basic technology in production. And that is it for Tesla. Trucks. Any comment about trucks from you, Jay, before I just make a comment about the increasing numbers of the Ford aluminum bodied pickup showing up all over the place, which tells me that aluminum is not going to be the big problem that Chevrolet tried to make it be with those ads where they dropped pointed concrete blocks or metal blocks into the pickup beds of Fords versus Chevys, and the aluminum pickup beds perforated and the steel beds supposedly didn't.
Do you have an option?
What?
Do you have
you
an option,
have option
on getting
no,
aluminum or not?
No, you don't have an option of getting a steel-bedded Ford pickup anymore.
So because you don't have an option, it sort of takes that right off the table, doesn't it? Or do other companies
it's not
have?
The point. The real point is Chevy was trying to blitz the aluminum pickup idea as being an advantage over theirs.
It's a moot point. Because
it's a moot point.
Let's face it. Historically, and let me be a little sarcastic here, Chevy truck buyers will buy Chevy trucks, and Ford buyers will buy Ford trucks. And that's the end of that story. And that'll be like that until the end of time.
Yeah, but it's Dodge interesting. The Ford pickup truck is the best-selling vehicle on the road now of a line of vehicles, month after month after month, and it beats all the other trucks. In some cases, you let's say, combined, if you pick up if, on a monthly basis, if it was Dodge and the Toyota Tundras combined.
Well, let's talk about car sales for just a second here, and just for fun. The Ford F-150 is the best-selling vehicle in America and has been for years, if not decades. And it's interesting to note, it is the best-selling vehicle in the middle of the country, but it is not the best-selling vehicle on the West Coast nor on the along the East Coast. On the West Coast specifically, you'll find brands now, I'm not talking about specific models, but Honda and Toyota are very, very strong. And you see proportionately more sedans as opposed to trucks or SUVs. On the East Coast, it varies even more because the Northeast obviously is vehicle sales are affected by our winters. And you start seeing a lot of all-wheel drive vehicles that become the best sellers. And I'll go on a side note of that. And interestingly, I came across some figures over the weekend. Unfortunately, they're 2 or 3 years old, but it was an article in the Hartford Courant, and you could click on town by town and see which vehicles within Connecticut, which brand of cars was the most popular. And so I started clicking, and in the middle of the state, in the east of the state, you'll find Toyotas and Honda being the most sold brands in any particular town. In Northeast Connecticut, it was Ford tend to be pretty very strong. But if you looked at Salisbury, Sharon, Canaan.
Our media broadcast area.
Immediate broadcast area.
In the Connecticut.
Invariably, Subaru was the number one owned car.
Did it go across? I'm just curious. In that little clink in Massachusetts, or to the west?
The article was a Hartford Courant, yeah. and covered only Connecticut. So, I'm guessing, and it's a guess only, that yes. And I would also think this was, I think, 2014 figures, and I do think that Subaru got even stronger, because I know they did on the national level. Their sales increased significantly over 2015 and 2016. Specifically with the new Outback. So those figures are probably still correct or even stronger.
I think they are, and I think also if you go to Vermont and New Hampshire, you got to find that Subaru is the predominantly owned.
And we're talking about
winter car up in those two states, like statewide as opposed to townwide.
In the town of Salisbury, and I don't have the exact numbers in mind, but we were talking about close to 500 Subarus, somewhere around 450, 470 Subarus, if I recall, out of a total of 2,200 cars. So what is that? Between 20 and 25%. So every one out of 4 or 5 cars is a Subaru. And it's you know, you can explain it by the car itself, but also the way the car can be purchased and maintained by people up here in the Northeast. And the dealership in Torrington has been very, very strong in sales in this area. And until, what is it, a year or two ago, you had Jim's Garage in Canaan. That was like the go-to place for servicing Subarus.
Yeah.
And I think that was a huge factor in people just going out and buying Subarus.
I definitely remember just before the article was written, or some time ago, when the Isuzu dealership was discontinued in Torrington. It was, you know, once you can't get your car serviced
conveniently,
you start looking elsewhere.
You just do.
Well, you know, you've got all the independent, we've talked about this on our shows before too, you have all the independent service people who can service any make car. But when you go buy a new car, you often have warranty issues and things like that, which you cannot get done for no cost in most independent repair shops. So you really have to go to your servicing selling dealer or a dealer that services the car you bought. whether you cross state lines to do that or not depends on where you buy your car and how loyal you want to be to the selling dealer, as opposed to just the most conveniently located dealer.
Well, I would think it's got more to do with, I mean, there have been so many recently, relatively speaking, you know, different software issues and adjustments. I think more like that.
That's right.
For an oil change, fine.
For oil change, fine. But the dealers, the selling dealers are selling you service packs now. And which keep you going back to that dealer because you prepay for a number of service oil changes. And basically you pay for it when you bought. I did this with my Sonata. When I bought my Sonata, I paid something like $400 or $595 for a service pack for this car. I have had this car going. It's going into the fourth year. I haven't paid for an oil change at the point of the change because I prepaid for them.
I know, but you have
to take
it to the point.
Am I going to go down to Dave's down the street and get my oil changed? No, because I have to pay $59 or $55.
Right, but that's because you prepaid. That's prepaid,
but that's what they're doing. This is what the dealers are doing in selling new cars, Jill. And
did you get some incentive for that?
What?
Did you get an
incentive? Well, yes. I don't know how many I've got coming to me, but I figured out that I'm probably saving a certain number of dollars per oil change over doing it individually, paying as you go, because what's happening is labor charges go up, oil charges go up during the years, and basically you've prepaid at a fixed rate so that you're getting the oil changes done at what they were costing or whatever the bonus was you were getting them for costing at the point of when you purchased the car and drove off the lot with it.
All right, we've got a couple minutes left. So we're
a little tidbit. I'm coming back to car sales and specifically here in the area. In that same chart that I was looking at over the weekend, Prius sales, Toyota Prius, there were, again, I think 2014, in Salisbury, I think close to 70 Prius, again, out of 2,200 vehicles. That's a lot of Prius. And that's all. It's a comment. We're going hybrid and we're going electric, but the Prius was more than just, I think, wanting to go hybrid. There's something about the Toyota Prius. It was a phenomenon.
Has a Prius has loved their Prius. Therefore, I think they're very loyal. They're going to keep going unless they need a different size car. The one thing that Prius has been complained about by a lot of people in the winter states is that they don't come in all-wheel drive.
But you can get a Toyota RAV4.
You can get a Toyota RAV4, but you don't get the 50 miles per gallon thing. And that's the one thing about the Prius that I've been talking about with owners. They're consistently getting between 40 to 45 and 55 miles a gallon, no matter what year it was. And that rings a bell in a lot of those people's heads, even though they may be able to afford a $100,000 car and put premium gas in elsewhere. It's just the whole concept of how easy and cheap a Prius is to own and run.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.